Chapter 56. In which the old man launches forth into his favorite theme, and relates a story about a queer client. Aha! Apostrophe apostrophe said the old man, a brief description of whose manner and appearance concluded the last chapter. Aha! Who was talking about the inns? Apostrophe, I was, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick. I was observing what singular old places they are. Apostrophe, you. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the old man contemptuously. What do you know of the time when young men shut themselves up in those lonely rooms and read, hour after hour, and night after night, till their reason wandered beneath their midnight studies, till their mental powers were exhausted, till morning's light brought no freshness or health to them, and they sank beneath the unnatural devotion of their youthful energies to their dry old books? Coming down to a later time, and a very different day, what do you know of the gradual sinking beneath consumption, or the quick wasting of fever, the grand results of life and dissipation which men have undergone in these same rooms? How many vain pleaders for mercy, do you think, have turned away heart-sick from the lawyer's office, to find a resting place in the Thames, or a refuge in the jail? They are no ordinary houses, those. There is not a panel in the old wainscoting, but what, if it were endowed with the powers of speech and memory, could start from the wall, and tell its tale of horror, the romance of life, sir, the romance of life. Commonplace as they may seem now, I tell you they are strange old places, and I would rather hear many a legend with a terrific sounding name, than the true history of one old set of chambers. Apostrophe, there was something so odd in the old man's sudden energy, and the subject which had called it forth, that Mr. Pickwick was prepared with no observation in reply, and the old man checking his impetuosity, and resuming the leer, which had disappeared during his previous excitement, said, look at them in another light, their most commonplace and least romantic. What fine places of slow torture they are. Think of the needy man who has spent his all, beggared himself, and pinched his friends, to enter the profession, which is destined never to yield him a morsel of bread. The waiting, the hope, the disappointment, the fear, the misery, the poverty, the blight on his hopes, and then to his career the suicide perhaps, or the shabby, slipshod drunkard. Am I not right about them? Apostrophe, and the old man rubbed his hands, and leered as if in delight at having found another point of view in which to place his favorite subject. Mr. Pickwick eyed the old man with great curiosity, and the remainder of the company smiled, and looked on in silence. Talk of your German universities, apostrophe said the little old man. Pooh, pooh. There's romance enough at home without going half a mile for it. Only people never think of it. Apostrophe, I never thought of the romance of this particular subject before, certainly, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, laughing. To be sure you didn't, apostrophe said the little old man. Of course not. As a friend of mine used to say to me, what is there in chambers in particular? Queer old places, said one. Not at all, said he. Lonely, said one. Not a bit of it, said he. He died one morning of apoplexy, as he was going to open his outer door. Fell with his head in his own letterbox, and there he lay for 18 months. Everybody thought he'd gone out of town. Apostrophe, and how was he found out at last? Apostrophe, apostrophe inquired Mr. Pickwick. The benchers determined to have his door broken open, as he hadn't paid any rent for 2 years. So they did. Forced the lock, and a very moldy skeleton in a blue coat, black knee shorts, and silks, fell forward in the arms of the porter who opened the door. Queer, that. Rather, perhaps. Rather, eh? The little old man put his head more on one side, and rubbed his hands with unspeakable glee. I know another case, apostrophe said the little old man, when his chuckles had in some degree subsided. It occurred in Clifford's Inn. Tenant of a top-set bad character shut himself up in his bedroom close it, and took a dose of arsenic. The steward thought he had run away. Opened the door, and put a bill up. Another man came, took the chambers, furnished them, and went to live there. Somehow or other he couldn't sleep, always restless and uncomfortable. "Odd," says he. "I'll make the other room my bedchamber, and this my sitting room." He made the change, and slept very well at night, but suddenly found that, somehow, he couldn't read in the evening. He got nervous and uncomfortable, unused to be always snuffing his candles and staring about him. "I can't make this out," said he, when he came home from the play one night, and was drinking a glass of cold grog, with his back to the wall, in order that he mightn't be able to fancy there was anyone behind him. "I can't make it out," said he, and just then his eyes rested on the little closet that had been always locked up, and a shudder ran through his whole frame from top to toe. "I have felt this strange feeling before," said he. "I cannot help thinking there's something wrong about that closet." He made a strong effort, plucked up his courage, shivered the lock with a blow or two of the poker, opened the door, and there, sure enough, standing bolt upright in the corner, was the last tenant, with a little bottle clasped firmly in his hand, and his face well. ... As the little old man concluded, he looked round on the attentive faces of his wondering auditory with a smile of grim delight. "What strange things these are you tell us of, sir," said Mr. Pickwick, minutely scanning the old man's countenance by the aid of his glasses. "Strange," said the little old man. "Nonsense. You think them strange because you know nothing about it. They are funny, but not uncommon." exclaimed Mr. Pickwick involuntarily. "Yes, funny, are they not?" replied the little old man, with a diabolical leer, and then, without pausing for an answer, he continued, "I knew another man, let me see, 40 years ago now, who took an old, damp, rotten set of chambers, in one of the most ancient inns, that had been shut up and empty for years and years before. There were lots of old women's stories about the place, and it certainly was very far from being a cheerful one. But he was poor, and the rooms were cheap, and that would have been quite a sufficient reason for him, if they had been 10 times worse than they really were. He was obliged to take some mouldering fixtures that were on the place, and, among the rest, was a great lumbering wooden press for papers, with large glass doors, and a green curtain inside. A pretty useless thing for him, for he had no papers to put in it, and as to his clothes, he carried them about with him, and that wasn't very hard work either. Well, he had moved in all his furniture, it wasn't quite a truck full, and had sprinkled it about the room, so as to make the 4 chairs look as much like a dozen as possible, and was sitting down before the fire at night, drinking the first glass of 2 gallons of whiskey he had ordered on credit, wondering whether it would ever be paid for, and if so, in how many years' time, when his eyes encountered the glass doors of the wooden press. 'Ah,' says he, 'if I hadn't been obliged to take that ugly article at the old broker's valuation, I might have got something comfortable for the money. I'll tell you what it is, old fellow,' he said, speaking aloud to the press, having nothing else to speak to, 'if it wouldn't cost more to break up your old carcass than it would ever be worth afterward, I'd have a fire out of you in less than no time.' He had hardly spoken the words, when a sound resembling a faint groan appeared to issue from the interior of the case. It startled him at first, but thinking, on a moment's reflection, that it must be some young fellow in the next chamber who had been dining out, he put his feet on the fender and raised the poker to stir the fire. At that moment, the sound was repeated, and one of the glass doors slowly opening, disclosed a pale and emaciated figure in soiled and worn apparel, standing erect in the press. The figure was tall and thin, and the countenance expressive of care and anxiety, but there was something in the hue of the skin, and gaunt and unearthly appearance of the whole form, which no being of this world was ever seen to wear. "Who are you?" said the new tenant, turning very pale, poising the poker in his hand, however, and taking a very decent aim at the countenance of the figure. Who are you? Don't throw that poker at me, replied the form. If you hurled it with ever so sure an aim, it would pass through me, without resistance, and expend its force on the wood behind. I am a spirit. And pray, what do you want here? Faltered the tenant. In this room, replied the apparition, my worldly ruin was worked, and I and my children beggared. In this press, the papers in a long, long suit, which accumulated for years, were deposited. In this room, when I had died of grief, and long deferred hope, two wily harpies divided the wealth for which I had contested during a wretched existence, and of which, at last, not one farthing was left for my unhappy descendants. I terrified them from the spot, and since that day have prowled by night, the only period at which I can revisit the earth about the scenes of my long protracted misery. This apartment is mine. Leave it to me. If you insist upon making your appearance here, said the tenant, who had had time to collect his presence of mind during this prosy statement of the ghosts, I shall give up possession with the greatest pleasure. But I should like to ask you one question, if you will allow me. Say on, said the apparition sternly. Well, said the tenant, I don't apply the observation personally to you, because it is equally applicable to most of the ghosts I ever heard of. But it does appear to me somewhat inconsistent, that when you have an opportunity of visiting the fairest spots of earth, for I suppose space is nothing to you, you should always return exactly to the very places where you have been most miserable. Egad, that's very true. I never thought of that before, said the ghost. You see, sir, pursued the tenant, this is a very uncomfortable room. From the appearance of that press, I should be disposed to say that it is not wholly free from bugs, and I really think you might find much more comfortable quarters. To say nothing of the climate of London, which is extremely disagreeable. You are very right, sir, said the ghost politely, it never struck me till now. I'll try change of air directly, and, in fact, he began to vanish as he spoke. His legs, indeed, had quite disappeared. And if, sir, said the tenant, calling after him, if you would have the goodness to suggest to the other ladies and gentlemen who are now engaged in haunting old empty houses, that they might be much more comfortable elsewhere, you will confer a very great benefit on society. I will, replied the ghost. We must be dull fellows, very dull fellows, indeed. I can't imagine how we can have been so stupid. With these words, the spirit disappeared. And what is rather remarkable, apostrophe added the old man, with a shrewd look round the table, he never came back again. Apostrophe, that ain't bad, if it's true, apostrophe, said the man in the mosaic studs, lighting a fresh cigar. If. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the old man, with a look of excessive contempt. I suppose, apostrophe, he added, turning to Lowten, he'll say next, that my story about the queer client we had, when I was in an attorney's office, is not true either, I shouldn't wonder. Apostrophe, I shan't venture to say anything at all about it, seeing that I never heard the story, apostrophe, observed the owner of the mosaic decorations. I wish you would repeat it, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. Ah, do, apostrophe, said Lowten, nobody has heard it but me, and I have nearly forgotten it. Apostrophe, the old man looked round the table, and leered more horribly than ever, as if in triumph, at the attention which was depicted in every face. Then rubbing his chin with his hand, and looking up to the ceiling, as if to recall the circumstances to his memory, he began as follows. The old man's tale about the queer client, it matters little, apostrophe, said the old man, where, or how, I picked up this brief history. If I were to relate it in the order in which it reached me, I should commence in the middle, and when I had arrived at the conclusion, go back for a beginning. It is enough for me to say that some of its circumstances passed before my own eyes. For the remainder I know them to have happened, and there are some persons yet living, who will remember them but too well. in the Borough High Street, near St. George's Church, and on the same side of the way, stands, as most people know, the smallest of our debtors' prisons, the Marshalsea. Although in later times it has been a very different place from the sink of filth and dirt it once was, even its improved condition holds out but little temptation to the extravagant, or consolation to the improvident. The condemned felon has as good a yard for air and exercise in Newgate as the insolvent debtor in the Marshalsea prison. Better. But this is past, in a better age, and the prison exists no longer. It may be my fancy, or it may be that I cannot separate the place from the old recollections associated with it, but this part of London I cannot bear. The street is broad, the shops are spacious, the noise of passing vehicles, the footsteps of a perpetual stream of people, all the busy sounds of traffic, resound in it from morn to midnight. But the streets around are mean and close, poverty and debauchery lie festering in the crowded alleys. Want and misfortune are pent up in the narrow prison. An air of gloom and dreariness seems, in my eyes at least, to hang about the scene, and to impart to it a squalid and sickly hue. Many eyes, that have long since been closed in the grave, have looked round upon that scene lightly enough, when entering the gate of the old Marshalsea prison for the first time, for despair seldom comes with the first severe shock of misfortune. A man has confidence in untried friends. He remembers the many offers of service so freely made by his boon companions, when he wanted them not. He has hoped the hope of happy inexperience, and however he may bend beneath the first shock, it springs up in his bosom, and flourishes there for a brief space, until it droops beneath the blight of disappointment and neglect. How soon have those same eyes, deeply sunken in the head, glared from faces wasted with famine, and sallow from confinement, in days when it was no figure of speech, to say that debtors rotted in prison, with no hope of release, and no prospect of liberty. The atrocity in its full extent no longer exists, but there is enough of it left to give rise to occurrences that make the heart bleed. 20 years ago, that pavement was worn with the footsteps of a mother and child, who, day by day, so surely as the morning came, presented themselves at the prison gate. Often after a night of restless misery and anxious thoughts, were they there, a full hour too soon, and then the young mother, turning meekly away, would lead the child to the old bridge, and raising him in her arms to show him the glistening water, tinted with the light of the morning sun, and stirring with all the bustling preparations for business and pleasure that the river presented at that early hour, endeavor to interest his thoughts in the objects before him. But she would quickly set him down, and hiding her face in her shawl, give vent to the tears that blinded her, for no expression of interest or amusement lighted up his thin and sickly face. His recollections were few enough, but they were all of one kind, all connected with the poverty and misery of his parents. Hour after hour had he sat on his mother's knee, and with childish sympathy, watched the tears that stole down her face, and then crept quietly away into some dark corner, and sobbed himself to sleep. The hard realities of the world, with many of its worst privations, hunger and thirst, and cold and want, had all come home to him, from the first dawnings of reason. And though the form of childhood was there, its light heart, its merry laugh, and sparkling eyes were wanting. The father and mother looked on upon this, and upon each other, with thoughts of agony they dared not breathe in words. The healthy, strong-made man, who could have borne almost any. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.